This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Mario Saldana on trial for the murder of Jared Breitigan, the conspiracy to murder Jared Breitigan, his lovely wife, Shanna. She's on deck next. This is almost like it's the appetizer to the main course, if you will. Lil Mario getting his day in court. At 9:30 on the morning of August 21st, Judge London Kite halted a first-degree murder trial in the middle of cross-examination. She stopped it to deal with Kristen Breitigan, who's the widow of Jared, the man the defendant is accused of having killed. Kristen had been ordered to hand her phone to the court by 9 a.m. so data could be extracted for the defense's team of Shanna Gardner, the ex-wife charged alongside Mario Fernandez and Jared Breitigan's death. Kristen refused. Judge Kite granted her an order to show cause, which means Kristen must now stand in front of a judge and explain why she shouldn't be held in contempt of court. Jared was ambushed and shot in February 2022, the whole reason we're talking about this, with his two-year-old daughter strapped in the back seat. 4.5 years later, the person facing a contempt threat in a Jacksonville courtroom was his widow. Fernandez, the man accused of arranging the killing, watched his own trial pause for all of it. That was one fight over one phone. August 21st held three of them, and by the end of the day, every fight in this case had become the same fight over who controls what a phone remembers. Gardner's lawyers want specific material off of Kristen's phone, and the reason starts with the children. Jared and Gardner's two kids are listed as witnesses in these murder trials. And Gardner's team told the court, Kristen has exchanged thousands of messages with them. The defense wants to know whether any of it shows influence over child witnesses who may end up testifying in the case against their own mother. A second deposition gave the defense more. Gardner's team says it showed Kristen in ongoing contact with other witnesses, and one of them, identified in court papers as EF, told a defense investigator she wouldn't speak with him without Kristen's permission first. To Gardner's lawyers, it's evidence the widow may be pressuring witnesses. The approved subpoena is built around that theory. Certain messages with the children's communications with the EF, activity on the Justice for Jared social media accounts, and certain contacts with attorneys and law enforcement. Kristen attorneys call it a fishing expedition and argue she's protected by Marcy's Law, Florida's constitutional amendment giving crime victims privacy and freedom from harassment. Prosecutors warn that granting it could teach every future defendant to demand a victim's private life just by alleging bias. Her lawyer put the stakes plainly. No case law anywhere makes a murdered man widow's hand over her phone to the defense. Judge Kite named the line this fight sits on. If Kristen were solely a victim, Kite said, she doesn't know that she would have granted a subpoena, but Kristen is also a witness. And Gardner's constitutional right to challenge the witness against her forced the decision. Kite built in a filter, reviewing the extracted data in her chambers before anything reaches the defense, and she offered Kristen the chance to strip up private material herself. Her lawyer said no. Kite has heard this dispute across at least 7 hearings, and her answer, the bench was blunt, I have ruled. So the 9 a.m. deadline came on August 21st, and the phone didn't. Kite gave Kristen 30 minutes to comply, then set a lunchtime hearing to decide whether the widow at the center of this case would be held in contempt. Kristen's lawyers went over her head to the 5th District Court of Appeals instead. That afternoon, the appellate court granted a stay. The order froze. The contempt hearing died on the calendar, and Kristen got 3 business days to make her full argument. A hearing in Gardner's own case was canceled in the fallout. The widow kept her phone by a matter of hours. Well, that fight buried and burned through the courthouse. The jury upstairs spent the day learning what happened to a different phone. An ATF agent who spent years as an intelligence analyst for the ATF came to the stand. Prosecutors called her to walk the jury through records for Fernandez, Henry Tenen, Shanna Gardner, and a friend of Fernandez named John Biggerstaff. Tenen is the tenant from Fernandez's rental property on Potomac Avenue. And prosecutors say Fernandez hired him to leave a tire in a dark road, wait for Jared to stop and get out, and then shoot him. The state put a chart in front of the jury tracking contact between Fernandez and Tenen across 2022. According to the courtroom record, it showed 26 communications in January and 37 in February, the month Jared died. Then the line falls: 32 in March, 21 in April, 9 in May, 5 in June, 2 in July. By August, the chart showed zero. Prosecutors say the records caught one moment inside that slide. On March 9th, police released photos of the blue truck seen leaving the murder scene. The next day, per the state's records, Fernandez and Tenen were on the phone together for 27 minutes. The defense went after every bar on that chart. Tenen rented from Fernandez and handled his landscaping. And roughly 30 contacts a month between the landlord and a working tenant is ordinary communication. When the truck photos went public, there were no bursts of panic calls. Counsel pointed out Butler conceded the limit of her own analysis, agreeing that gaps in phone activity don't implicate anyone. I can only say that there are gaps. The evening of the killing itself came down to one of those gaps. Fernandez's phone shows an incoming call at 7:09 p.m. on February 16th in a stretch of silence covering the window where Jared was ambushed, and prosecutors believe the phone was turned off. Their own witness gave ground on cross, with Butler finding similar gaps on four other occasions, and the FBI agent who mapped the cell data agreeing there's no evidence Fernandez left his house that evening. The defense's point was simpler still. A quiet phone is not evidence of anything. The money took the same beating. Investigators found three checks totaling $10,000 written to Tenen and signed by Fernandez in March and April of 22. The memo lines described landscaping and roof work. One read Kickstarter, good luck. Butler confirmed Tenen visited business plan websites within 2 weeks of receiving them, which is the state's way of suggesting the checks funded something other than roofing. The defense flipped it. Handwritten check is the most traceable payment there is, carrying the name and signature of the man who wrote it. Not one of them says a word about Jared Breitigan, nor would it. Then Butler turned to what disappeared from Fernandez's Google account. Oh, here we go. On March 1st of 2022 is the day Fernandez and Gardner sat for police interviews. Butler testified that Fernandez's Google records show more than 5,000 deletions processed that morning before he ever walked into the room with detectives. Per her testimony, his entire YouTube history and his entire search history were wiped in bulk. She described a trip in the same window. In late February, days before that interview, Fernandez ran map searches for North Carolina and Pennsylvania, and the state says those searches lined up with the dates his stepchildren were scheduled for forensic interviews. He bought toiletries at a Walmart, called multiple hotels, booked a two-night stay, and stayed one night. On cross, Butler handed the defense what the records couldn't prove. She acknowledged she could not identify what was deleted and could not connect any of it to the killing. The deletion logs included Facebook links and websites that had nothing to do with homicide, and nobody ever found a search about getting rid of a firearm. All the records established is timing, a mass purge on the morning he was due to sit across from detectives. Detective David Ostertag works digital forensics for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and he examined the phones themselves. On Fernandez's Samsung, he found a factory reset dated August 26 to 22, a factory reset that wipes a phone back to the date it left the box, erasing every photo, every text, every search, and every piece of location data. The defense had an ordinary explanation waiting, and on cross, Ostertag agreed the reset could have been routine, noting Fernandez made a $70.46 purchase at a T-Mobile store that same day. Prosecutors answered with what happened next. Fernandez kept using the same phone, unlike someone trading it in, and logged back into 35 accounts. The number of chats with Henry Tenen on that phone at the reset, zero. A court order can force a widow to surrender everything her phone remembers, down to years of private messages no court order retrieves what a factory reset destroyed 4 years ago. The morning of August 21st belonged to the first fact. The afternoon belonged to the second. What survived from before the wipe survived on the other people's phones? Tenon's old LG still held forward messages from January 4th of 22, the day prosecutors say Tenon joined the conspiracy. At 7:04 that evening came a text from Fernandez, "Heading your way." Tenon answered, "Okay." And Fernandez wrote back, "I'm here, brother." At 4:04 on August 21st, Judge Kite excused the jury for the weekend. What happened next? The 12 people deciding this case never saw. The state proffered a witness, which means testimony was auditioned in front of the judge alone so she can decide whether a jury ever hears it. Javel Ponder came in, shackled and wearing jail orange, carrying 8 felony convictions. He says he shared a jail dorm with Fernandez in the summer of 24 and that Fernandez talked about the case. The prosecutor asked whose idea it was to kill Jared. Ponder's answer, according to the courtroom record, Mario. Cliff's Fernandez told him Gardner had no problem with her ex-husband being killed, but she didn't want the kids caught in the crossfire. He claims Fernandez said Henry ended up doing it and messing it all up. The defense didn't wait for a ruling. Counsel told the judge no human being would believe what Ponder has to say and argued that the court's earlier ruling on marital privilege, the legal protection covering private communications between Fernandez and Gardner, closes the story entirely. Kite had not yet ruled. The state says another proffered witness comes August 24th, and it puts its theory on the record in plain words. The purpose of the killing was to stop Jared's custody of his children. That's the prosecution's claim. And the jury will judge this case on the evidence. We'll keep bringing you day-to-day coverage of this case as it slowly moves its way closer to her, Santa Gardner. She's up right after Mario. We'll be here for it. What do you think so far? Is it strong? Is it a strong case on the part of the prosecution? I don't know. This is one of those where logically, it all lines up. Is there enough between Tenon and Mario, and Tenon and Chana, even more importantly, that can be proven in a court of law that she ordered the hit, or has something to do with the hit, or is aware of the hit? And is there enough with Mario, or have they found enough of a gap and enough of a way to go, can't quite prove it? I don't know. You tell me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. Be sure to follow the podcast wherever you go so you don't miss any of our coverage. There's a QR code on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube. Go ahead, pull up your phone, take you right to our link tree. You can select where you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Just search Hidden Killers and you will find us. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.